Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode and the entire rest of the season is proudly sponsored by Pregnant Together. Pregnant Together is a virtual community for queer folks, single parents, and anyone who's ever felt different through the process of growing your family. It's run by queer midwife Maria Goodman. The community offers tons of resources for every stage of family building, from trying to conceive to parenting. What are you going to get? You're going to get monthly live support groups. You're going to get access to advice from a queer healthcare provider, very important. And best of all, you're going to get connection with a community of folks going through the same ups and downs that you are. And the best thing is, listeners of the Queer Family Podcast get their first month free, y'all. So you're going to click the link in our show notes to get your free month now. And if you want to learn more, head to www.pregnanttogether.com. It's a wonderful resource. Check it out.
Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
I just look at all of us and our relationships are so different between us and the kids. We each have something to offer them that's different from everybody else's in the equation. And I really appreciate that.
Welcome to the Queer Family Podcast, y'all. The show all about family, but with gay. My name is Jamie. I'm your host. And you, my beautiful friends, are tuning into the show whose mission is to celebrate, highlight, uplift, and normalize LGBTQIA plus families in all of our beautiful identities. Can you tell I've said that so many times in the past year, but I never get tired of saying it because it's so true and it's so important. And this episode does everything I just said and more. I had the pleasure of sitting down with Miles, who is actually an old friend, but I haven't spoken with Miles in 20 years at least. And Miles has a book that Miles wrote about his transition, basically. We had such a beautiful conversation just about identity. And really, we got deep into kind of the labels we put on ourselves and also the labels that society puts on ourselves and the idea of transition and the ideas of change and how change is constant. I can't wait for you to hear Miles' perspective on identity, because it's beautiful and it's refreshing. And Miles also became a bonus parent to teenagers recently. And it's just a wonderful testament to the truth that queer families really are redefining and do redefine the idea of what is family. It's absolute. I can't wait for you to hear it. But before I let you hear it and before I roll this tape, I want to show you something. So if you're listening on Spotify or if you're watching the YouTube, you're going to have to look at the video right now because I'm showing you my newest award, the Anthem Award. The Queer Family Podcast has won an Anthem Award, y'all. It's going to go on the shelf behind me with my other two awards, the Signal Awards. This is for the 2024 Podcaster Audio category. It's a silver award, silver. We got silver. And it's just heavy, y'all. And it's really cool and it's beautiful. I love getting these awards. They do feel a little superfluous because what am I really going to do with them except put them on the shelf behind me? but it does feel really awesome to be recognized. The Anthem Awards were started by the Webby Awards and they celebrate purpose and mission-driven work. And it's truly an honor to get this. So anyway, I just wanted to show it to you because what else am I going to do with it? Feels great. So thanks, Anthem Awards. And one more thing to talk about. I have listener feedback from someone who emailed, and I love it when y'all email, and especially when you say nice things when you email, because it really does brighten my day, my week, my month. I can go back to these emails and read them when I'm feeling down. I appreciate every single email I do get. This is what Jennifer wrote. I identify as one of those cisgender straights. Please forgive me. I forgive you. And I'm glad you tune in. Jennifer says, thank you for being the reason I fell in love with podcasts. Thank you for teaching me how to be a better nurse and ally. Oh, and thank you for all you do to uplift, highlight, and celebrate the stories of these beautiful families. Yeah, I can tell you really listen, Jennifer, because you basically have my opening spiel down. Thank you, Jennifer, for reaching out. And for the kind note, there was a lot more that Jennifer said in the note, but I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's her private business. Anyway, if you feel like you might be a great guest on this show, if your story might resonate with the audience, please send an email and know that the best way to get in contact with me, I'm saying this on the podcast so that I know when people actually listen to the show, is to email at thequeerfamilypodcast@gmail.com. If you send a DM, it might get lost in the shuffle. And a lot of times I get DMs from like these brands who just see that there's somewhat of a little following. And then they're like, ooh, I love what you're doing. But I can tell they don't really listen. And then it gets me slightly salty because I'm not here to work my butt off to give you free advertising. You know what I mean? Anyway, getting off my soapbox now. But yes, if you feel like you have a story that would really resonate, please send me an email to thequeerfamilypodcast@gmail.com. I read each and every email that comes through, except some PR agents who don't know really who I am and think I'm about ovaries health still. That still happens. About the health of uteris. Yeah, so that still happens. But I do read. If it's from one of you, I read it and I savor it. So send emails. Also, one more thing I want to say before I roll the tape. I keep doing this to y'all. My mother does this to me on the phone. Does your mother do this? Like, you, okay, all right, I'm going to let you. Oh, one more thing. And this is what I do. Clearly, I am my mother's daughter. But one last thing. I did get a PR agent to reach out. It's Jonathan Van Ness's from Queer Eyes PR agent, because Jonathan has a children's book coming out. And I know that they just send it to all the queer media outlets. I must be on some serving list. And then, of course, me and Nicole wrote back and, oh my God, this would be amazing to get Jonathan. And they wrote back, okay, thank you. We'll be in touch. Like clearly what they do is they put me in, you know, on a list and they say, Jonathan, these are the ones we got. So I have a strong feeling there's no way they're going to pick my little show, this little show, to come on and share their new children's story. But if anybody has like a little voice in the ear of Jonathan, just be like, ooh, Jonathan, you should go on the Queer Family Podcast, because how awesome would that be? And listen, Jonathan, just to let you know, I'm going to ask, you know, like those questions that a non-queer interviewer on a major network is not going to ask you. We're going to go deep into the queer experience, Jonathan. So come on this here little show and we're going to dig deep. Everybody send Jonathan a DM, not me. I'm just kidding. Okay, it's time to roll the tape. I appreciate each and every one of you. Reach out, join my Patreon, and let's keep this community going. XO, love you. Mwah. Enjoy this interview with Miles.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Miles.
Hi, Jamie.
Y'all at home, this is 20-something years in the making here.
Big time reunion.
Oh my God. Miles, I have to ask because I don't know. What are your pronouns?
Oh, that's how long it's been. my pronouns are he, they. What are your pronouns?
She, her. It is so good to see you, Miles.
It's so great to be here. Thank you for having me. This is amazing. And the best part is I get to hang out with you.
So for everybody at home, I have known Miles since we were in our 20s. And that is over 20 years ago at this point. We were roommates when I was with my ex-girlfriend, Sarah. How crazy. So we go way the fuck back. But the other thing is we haven't really spoken since about 2008, which we were just doing the math and trying to figure it out.
That's correct.
Yeah, because life. And so I don't really know what you've been up to, except what I've seen on social media here and there. I can't wait to hear about it because a lot of stuff has happened in your life. Miles?
It has, as I'm sure it has in yours as well. You know, it's 20 years is a long time.
So without further ado, I'm going to ask you for your 30-second elevator pitch. I am going to put a timer up and you're going to tell who you are and why you're here talking to the Queer Fam Squad. Don't worry. I put this timer up. I never cut anyone off. I will never cut you off because I can't do that. But it's just a fun thing to do. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right, here we go. On your mark. Get set. Go, Miles. Go.
My name is Miles Barrero. I am trans, queer, yoga teacher in New York City, and I've written a book, which is a memoir, and I've lived as a girl, as a boy, as something in between. I've also been Catholic, Jewish, and spent a lot of time at Krishna's house, and I think that's all I have time for.
Boom. You did it. You did it in under 30 seconds, Miles. I'm very proud of you. Very proud of you. I knew you had it in you. Let's take it back to the beginning of Miles, young Miles. Your book and also your life kind of go hand in hand. So why don't we start with your life and we'll intersperse kind of the book? Because I'm assuming your book is kind of about your life.
I think that's what it is. Yeah. So little Miles, I was born in Brazil, in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And then I was raised in Bogota, Colombia during the Pablo Escobar years. So I literally lived there during the 80s and 90s when the worst of it was happening. And then I moved to college in Salt Lake City, Utah. I went to acting school, which is where I met your ex, Sarah, in school. And then I was there for some years. Then I went to Minneapolis for a year for an internship at the Children's Theater. Then I went to San Francisco for three. I did my MFA there. So that was kind of the trajectory that brought me here to New York.
And it's interesting because you went to the craziest places to go in the States. Queer person, except for San Francisco. Like when Sarah was like, oh yeah, my friend, we're going to go see my friend in San Francisco, but they came from Colombia and they moved to Salt Lake City. And I was like, what? Wait, they went from Colombia to Salt Lake? Why did they go to Salt Lake City? What? It was like a whole thing. Yep. Anyway.
Yeah, I guess I always had an adventurous spirit, you know? I think growing up, so I started my transition around the age of 40. So when I was a child and all through my sort of most of my years, I was really like existing as a girl in the world. I did figure out that I was queer around the age of 19.
Yeah.
Which was in Salt Lake City, you know, but I think because of my upbringing sort of in staunch Catholicism and all of that, I've been like that cartoon character that has a piano fall on its head and then the tooth is dangling, you know, like the key is like a dangling tooth. It's taken me a long time to realize things. And then when I realize things, I'm like, oh, that's what was happening.
And you think that's because of just where you grew up, how you grew up, the staunch Catholicism and just like the culture you grew up in?
And the lack of representation, the lack of, you know, seeing ourselves. I was just listening to the episode that you recorded with M. And in some ways, I can really relate to their experience.
Yeah.
In the sense that consciously, I didn't really realize until very late, I feel that I was queer and that I was trans. And yet, I also feel like simultaneously there was a part of me that always knew, but it didn't know what it knew. You know, it kind of just knew that it was different. Sometimes it knew how, like when I saw myself in little flashes represented, I would get like a little glimmer of like, oh, that feels right. Mm-hmm. But they weren't ever like complete. They were more like little breadcrumbs. And throughout all the little breadcrumbs, eventually, by the time I got to 40, I had put enough of those breadcrumbs together that I was like, wait a minute. And also there was enough representation then that I was able to kind of see myself, you know, and be like, oh, okay. That's more what's happening.
Yeah, I love that. And I love how you described it. And also, because when you first came out in Salt Lake City, your queerness looked very different than it does now, right? Like,
so when I was coming out, I really like, I think I came out first as a lesbian. I think all these words that we use, you know, to term ourselves they're fraught. And they're also, I think when we also kind of decide that we want them, they can be very fun. But for me, they always have existed mostly as shorthands, you know, like they don't describe the thing itself. Like they're useful to kind of get on the same page quickly, but all the details are always feel kind of wrong and messy to me. Originally, I was kind of like, I think gay was my favorite term, but then I was a lesbian because I dated women. Yeah, and then it started to change. I guess my identity started to change when I moved to New York City after grad school. I heard of the word boy for the first time, B-O-I, and I thought that was neat because that felt kind of like an indeterminate. It felt like sort of like someone who wasn't grown up all the way, which I felt like I wasn't. And it felt like someone who wasn't potentiated yet, which I felt like I wasn't. I took a turn for boy there. And then as things kind of went deeper and deeper, you know, then I sort of felt like I was an in-betweener there for a while, not sure what I was. And then I sort of realized that I needed to transition or that I needed to take some steps toward transitioning. And now I feel like I'm just queer and non-binary, and I use trans as a shorthand, but I feel like trans sort of still, like transgender still implies that the genders that are upheld by our society are thought of as more important or higher status. So I feel like I'm not really transgender. I'm just a human being with some other gender than the ones that we talk about all the time, you know? And so non-binary feels most appropriate these days. But also with all of that, I'm very like if we need to use the labels to get there, you know, like it's fine. It's not a pet peeve. I just think language is an interesting thing, you know, because it both gives you like a focal point, but sometimes it focuses you too much.
Having these two genders and having to put ourselves in these boxes and decide, and it's not all black and white. None of it is black and white. Not a single part of it is black and white. So you're right. I agree. And then also you have the perspective of also your native language was Spanish. Like you grew up speaking Spanish.
That's right. Yeah, it was really interesting. I just got back a couple of days ago from being in Colombia, and I had dinner with some friends, and it was the first time that I had had a non-binary conversation in Spanish. And in Spanish, most words have a gender. And so it was really interesting because it's not just the pronouns. It's like a lot of words, instead of ending in A or O, they'll end in E. And it was so fun to tackle that, you know, to sort of my brain, I felt like was lit up just with the new sounds. It was like, oh my goodness. It was like speaking a new language almost, but I don't know, like, I think it's such a worthy, fun undertaking to, if people need certain things to accommodate, you know what I mean? So I felt totally lit up by it.
Okay. So is that happening? Like in the Spanish language, are people going towards this non-binary way of speaking more and more? Like, is it actually being adopted and used?
No, I don't think so, unless you have non-binary people in the room, kind of. Right. But I was with a group of queerdos and weirdos. So I feel like we were just kind of, you know, shooting the shit in non-binary Spanish. And it was just so refreshing.
That's so cool. That's fun. And also, like, yeah, your mind is like on fire because you're having to like think on the fly.
Totally.
Oh, I love that. So how has transitioning gone for you in regards to friends and family?
It's been a journey. I mean, I definitely feel like I've been super, super lucky because I feel like at the end of the day, love has always been the highest like ingredient in the room. And so that has made it so that no matter what happens, like we've stumbled through it together. I mean, this is part of what my book is about. You know, it's about what happens when a group of people is facing a transition. The book also starts kind of when my dad dies. And so it's this idea of like this group of people going through a transition or many transitions, and what happens when the missteps and the things that go wrong happen. And I would argue that when love leaves a space for that, that intimacy can grow. And so it's not about what went right necessarily, but in the end, the summation is what went right. But it's about all of the little mishaps and missteps and all of the hard little learnings along the way, and how we all managed to be patient with one another as we stumbled in the dark. That to me is so much more compelling than perfection or than some sort of very clean, almost like medical allyship.
Right. Well, and there's no such thing as perfection. You can't get there. And the only real constant in life that you really can rely on and bet on is change.
Right? Exactly.
Totally. So life is really about transitions, more than just one kind of transition, right? The loss of a parent is a huge transition. So let's go into your book. Let's dig in. Where did it come from? Why did you write it, and what's it about? And what can we expect from it?
I started writing it because I would write a blog that was once a month for my yoga students. It felt like philosophy was not very easily brought into a practical form, the yogic philosophy. So I wanted to take a stab at bringing that and kind of giving it an anchor so that people could feel like they could really use the science of yoga in their lives, not just the asana, not just the workout, you know, or the moving of the body, but the deeper layers of the practice. And through that, I realized that I really enjoyed the practice of writing once a month. And I also realized that people were digging what I was putting out there. And then when I kind of really started taking steps toward my transition, I realized that I found myself educating people so much or having to educate people. And I thought, well, clearly the book that needs to be written is a different book. But I didn't want, you know, being an artist, like you and I were storytellers, right? From when we were a lot younger. And so being a storyteller for my whole life, I didn't want it to be didactic and clearly educational. That's just not who I am. That's not how I teach. I wanted it to be a literary, like I wanted to put out a piece of art that was beautiful, you know, that was really satisfying. And I wanted it to have like the depth of feeling of the human sort of canon of depth of feeling. And I wanted it to be universal enough that anybody could relate to my shoes. Because I ultimately feel like even though my experience is different, and it is important to highlight that, what we have in common is much wider and much more interesting than what makes us different. And what makes us different is really our magic. It's the thing that gives us, it's our gift. You know, it's what we can add in terms of meaning to the world. So I wanted to tell the story, my story, in a way that inspired people to live their lives fully, because that's what I've had to do in order to step into my shoes. And also that would inspire kindness and understanding and just a wider, like a wider base for us, you know, as we continued in this conversation together.
Yes. And that is like the same reason why this podcast was started. Same thing I say about how this podcast is not just for queer people. It is for everyone. And I love what you said about we are more alike, my friend, than we are unalike. You know, like it's so true.
Totally.
Beautiful. And it's that little spark of magic that makes us unique, you know, which is also like sprinkled with or like flavored with maybe the queer part of ourselves, which is very special if you see it that way. And if you, for me, very special part of myself that I want to cultivate and model pride in, because especially now, because I have children. So I have to.
And you're doing such a great, you know, actually like just telling stories. I think even just the act of telling our story is such an act of activism, and it's such a gift, because ultimately the table has been surrounded by other people. You know, like we have not had spaces at the table. We have not had the platforms and the kind of reach to tell our stories. So there's just simply, you cannot have too many queer stories. You cannot have too many trans stories, you know, like they're all so essential. Like I've been, you know, before coming on, I've been listening to your podcast and just delighting in the breadth of story and just how gorgeous queer people and the challenge of finding ways to have family within a world that really does its best to not allow it, you know?
Yes. And we are not represented. You are so right. And we need, there cannot be enough queer perspective. There can't be enough. Because it hasn't been out there for all of this. It needs to be uplifted. And it's time for everyone to take notice. That's why everybody needs to listen.
That's right.
I agree. And I also think everybody's a little bit queer. They just haven't found it yet. So there's that too.
Oh, I'm with you there. Yeah. I mean, also because, you know, like the stuff that we talk about are the purest, like furthest poles from one another, right? Which is like sort of cishet men and cishet women, right? And then there's everything under the sun between that. There's just room for all of it, you know? Like I feel like we'll spend my life working toward a world that invites our differences and that invites all of the spectrum, you know?
Same, brother. Same. Preach.
Yeah.
Preach, Miles. That. Yes. Yes. And now speaking of families and our interesting paths to family, can we dig into yours? Because I know nothing about it. And I just heard only a top line about a little bit of it. And Ken, let's get in. I want to hear what's going on in Miles's life.
Like 5.5 years ago, maybe, I met someone on OkCupid. Which I have to say, a little parenthetical, that for a trans person like myself, being able to go on an app, I know apps are not, I'm really a face-to-face person. I function better that way, especially being a yoga teacher. I have to say that it was really delightful for me to be able to go on an app, because it was at a time when I was really stressed out and I was kind of going through the first steps of my transition. Mm-hmm. And I felt being face-to-face with people was too stressful because they would read me as something that I was not. And OkCupid at the time had enough sort of filters that I could filter it so that people who were interested in people like me could find me. And that was really, it took, at a time when I was beyond stressed, when I thought I was going to lose my nerve and my mind, it made it so that I could actually go out with people and feel not entirely like, you know, I was going to either like meet a sociopath or just be so stressed out because there was no point of understanding and I had to explain everything at the get-go. So that was one thing. But I met Sarah on OkCubes, and then we started hanging out. Actually, it was around the time that I had started writing my book, and I learned she was a poet. Ooh. And so I was like, well, remind me never to mention my book that I've started writing. And then that year, my grandmother had died on my mom's side. Then 39 days later, my dad passed away. And 39 days after him, my grandfather on my mom's side passed away. So we had lost sort of like everybody that was at the helm of my mom's side of the family. And for her 70th birthday, she decided she wanted to go on a trip. She wanted to go to 4 places because there are 4 of us. Each one of us was going to pick a place and then we were just going to go. So I was gone for a month and Sarah was here in New York and we kept in touch. And she somehow convinced me in a moment of no sleep to send her some pages. And I sent her the pages and she said, oh, you know, there's something here. You need to follow this lead. And anyway, but then we kind of, things got romantic. We have been together ever since. And, but she was coming out of a divorce of, I don't know, 21 years married or something. And she has 2 kids. One of them was 13 when I met him and the other one was 15 when I met them. And I met them the day the pandemic started, kind of.
Whoa.
Because we had to go get groceries for all the houses and drop them off. So it wasn't ideal. And it was very stressful for the first few years, I would say. But, you know, they're amazing kids. And now our eldest is like 20 and our youngest is like 18. And it's been, I don't know, for me, getting a chance to share space with them and see them grow and offer like assistance or support when I can and when they let me. It's been nothing short of a miracle.
Yeah. Yeah. You became an insta-parent. It actually happens a lot in our community because
because
of the nature
of... You either have them or you don't. Yeah.
Right. And you became an insta-parent of teenagers. Dang. I'm not there yet.
Yeah. How old are your kiddos?
10 and 6.
Oh my goodness. Those are beautiful ages.
Yeah, no, they are. They're kind of fun right now. Also, like the bane of my existence, but also fun.
That's their job.
Exactly. They really push you. They really push you to grow. So now you're basically like a blended family.
Yes. And actually, what's also interesting about all of that is that our eldest is like me.
Oh, like in the queer space,
In the queer space. Yeah. And that happened before I came into the picture. They transitioned before I did, I think.
So like you coming into the picture, I'm imagining it must have been really great.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it is, maybe it's not. I have no idea, but one hopes, you know. I mean, I think when everything adds up, it is really great, you know, and I think at some point they'll notice that it's pretty cool, you know, to have that. But, you know, for me, it's just amazing to, I don't know, like there's definitely a sweetness there to be able to just share that with someone and know that they can see themselves even in our own family represented.
Yeah. It's beautiful. And your partner, was your partner in a queer relationship?
No.
So this was one of those hetero relationships.
Yes.
Was she dating the queer way before she met you?
I don't want to put thoughts in her mouth, right. But I think part of how she felt was that she was already feeling queer vibes. And when she started looking in the queer, she found me. Honestly, like I had only been on the app for a couple of days and she found me and I was in the process of moving. So I hadn't been particularly active. She found me and sort of got me to go out to dinner with her. And then that's where it all started.
Okay. I like this. I like this a lot. So see, this is the beauty. Family happens in all sorts of places for our queer community. I mean, for everyone. And that is to the point of, you know, we're all more alike than we are unalike. But in the queer community, it really does. You hear stories like this a lot of families coming to be in different sets of circumstances. And it's freaking
which
beautiful.
I so love, because I feel like the cishet world has such a strict way of romantic love relationship. And it's kind of, to me, when I look at it, sometimes it's very based on like a kind of ownership. It's like, well, if you're not mine anymore, then there's no point in really relating to you. And I love that in queer relationships, I think oftentimes because we're changing so much and we don't assume that we understand ourselves. So we're kind of always going through a lot of change in relationship with other people. It means that sometimes you end up walking like a stretch of the way with someone that you love a lot, but maybe is not a great match. And we allow for that. Like we allow for ourselves to have a past and to come from somewhere with our love and to be moving towards something with our love. And I think that's one of the most amazing things that I think we have to offer the world is that perspective that you don't have to throw relationships out just because they don't work.
Right. And I'm going to extend that into family building. I'm going to extend that for the non-queer world into you don't have to throw away the baby with the bathwater, so to speak. And also literally, like if it's not working out, there are so many paths. You just have to like stick with love and know that it's going to all end up all right in the end, which is what the queer community has learned to do so well. Because we have had
totally.
To. Yeah. You don't have to give up on trying to find the love of your life, or you don't have to give up on trying to find that the right match. And you don't have to give up on making a family if it's not happening the way you think it should be happening.
Right. And even though sometimes things don't work out, you know, like two people may not be right for each other in this moment. If more people come into the picture, there's also like an absorption of those people there can be into the family unit. And there's something to be said about having also like a broader perspective for kids to be able to appreciate like different kinds of relationships and different kinds of people within the relationship. I think it's really cool to get that information too. You know, I think it happens and you end up with more with bonus parents, you know, like they do have something that they can offer the equation. And that's, I don't know, like I just look at all of us and our relationships are so different between us and the kids. We each have something to offer them that's different from everybody else's in the equation. And I really appreciate that. That adds like a value to the kid's experience.
Yeah, the more the merrier. And that goes along with donor families and chosen families and all these things that are like really prevalent in queer community and queer families.
Totally.
And the things we have learned to embrace, most of us. And if you haven't, and if you don't want to embrace the donor families or other things, that's your prerogative too. And that's beautiful as well. However you want to do family is you. I have to say that, my little disclaimer there.
Totally.
But it's just all freaking beautiful. And I want to read your book and I need everybody to go get your book. So where can everybody find your book and where can everybody find you?
Well, you can find me at milesyoga.com. All the things are under there, my yoga practice, my craniosacral therapy practice, and the book. The book is called Beautiful Monster, A Becoming, and it is available everywhere in the sense that if your favorite bookstore doesn't carry it yet and you want it, it would really help us if you call them and buy it and ask for them. If they don't carry it, they'll get it for you. It's available. But oftentimes, I actually was listening to you, Jamie, talk about your show and how hard it is to get funded for your show. And I would like to hop on that and just remind people that it is exponentially harder for us to tell our stories. Exponentially, like you can't imagine. It's not what you imagine. It's like 10 times worse or 100 times worse. You know, if you feel like you are like want to read the book, the best way is to call a bookstore that doesn't have it, order it, or buy it from a bookstore that does. And it's out there. They just have to, you know, they haven't stocked it because since all the things, it didn't meet whatever things it needed to get on the shelves. But it's out there and you can get it on Barnes & Noble and Amazon as well, even though I do prefer the indie bookstores.
And I feel like all of the listeners at home are right on board with you. And it's because, you know, I'm doing quote unquote, it's not mainstream enough for the big corporations to pick up a bunch of copies
because
it's not going to make them enough money, right?
That's right.
When there are plenty of folks who would love to hear your story. They just don't know it yet. That's why it has to be on the shelf. Like Jesus.
Yeah, totally.
Right. And then also, I know also from the book I wrote based on the podcast with my previous co-host, and I've asked my listeners to do this as well. You can call your local libraries and also the libraries that like are everywhere that you see. You can call any library and ask them to carry a book as well. So that's something that everybody should do too to help get these
absolutely
books.
And then, you know, if you do buy it and happen to read it, you know, like sharing it with friends and just writing a review and leaving some stars, all of those things really help the algorithm pick it up. So there are ways to help. And, you know, for me, it's just been a thrilling experience to have the story out there and to feel like people can learn from it, both allies and like parents of kids like me, and also for kids like me to feel represented and like the end is not always impossibly dark.
Yes, we need this. It's life-saving information here. These are life-saving stories, literally. What's not more important than that? I don't know. So anyway, we're like preaching to the choir with the listeners. So basically, everybody at home or in your car or wherever you are on the subway listening, do all of the things I ask you to do for my show, for Miles as well. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone.
Miles, it has been so great catching up, reconnecting. We're getting together. I'm coming to yoga and I didn't know you did craniosacral therapy. I need some of that in my life. So, Miles, we're coming back together.
Nice. Here we go. I love this. I love this excuse to get together.
This is great. It's been such a pleasure. And everything will be in the show notes, people. So check out the show notes for links and things like that to get the book and look at the book and all this stuff. Miles, thank you. This has been great.
Jamie, thanks for doing everything you do.
Ah, you too. Queer Family Podcast. Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.